Welcome back to the Stovetop Toy Show, where we blow the dust off collectors and their stories. Today I have invited someone of immense talents. On top of being a toy collector, he is a graphic designer, toy customizer, and to top it all off, an amazing voice actor. Cameron, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you collect?
Oh, you're too kind. Hi, everybody. My name is Cameron Holiday, and I'm a predominantly Transformers collector. And aside from that, I do collect some Marvel figures and little miscellaneous knickknacks along the way.
So, Cam, let's start at the beginning of your story. How did you get into collecting?
Well, it starts from when I was about four. Back in the days of Beast Wars, my first Transformer that I was ever given was a Transmetals Rat Trap. And my mom and my stepdad had just met, and we were going down to Hawaii where he was having a job. And Rat Trap was my first, and soon after was Air Hammer, the Fusor, who's a cross between a hammerhead shark and an eagle, I think.
That is a very ridiculous toy, and I went a whole convention trying to track one down once.
It's fantastic.
Oh, God. That's a joke, that toy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I love it to bits, though.
I do, too.
Yeah. So my first ever thing with Rat Trap was turning him into his wheeled rat mode, and I was rolling him down the slopes of the Burbank Airport on the inside while we were getting ready to go to Hawaii. And it started from there. I just got more and more Beast Wars toys, and I stuck with it until Beast Machines. And from there, I kind of graduated to Bionicles, and I collected those for several years. And I had kind of a break around 2006. And then when the movies came in, 2007, that's what really reeled me in, and I've been collecting hardcore the entire way since.
So you're a big Beast Wars guy.
Oh yeah.
So you have taken your story a little bit further, and you have made yourself somewhat a career out of what you've collected. So why don't you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So I now work for a company called Repro Labels, or Toy Hacks, which is a company that makes upgrade sticker sets for Transformers toys. And it can range anywhere from the very first vintage toys all the way up to what's hot and coming out now. What else would you like me to elaborate on?
What do you do there?
Oh, well, I'm a graphic designer, and I'm the person who gets the die lines in, and I get kind of a project sheet that says, hey, we'd like to put maybe a little bit of red over here, a G1 reference over here, and maybe some rims on these wheels or a speaker here. And I'll get those lines in, and I'll create the artwork for them in Adobe Illustrator.
So obviously you're the creative type. So at what point did the creative part of your fandom kind of lied with that creative part?
Well, I'd say it really started from my early childhood. My dad, he and I would build Star Wars Legos together, and that was one of our big bonding things. And he gave me the idea. He was like, how cool would it be if someday you could make toys for a living? Because, I mean, you'd get to play with toys all day long, and you'd still get paid for it. So when I think back, everything that I've tried to do has been to live up to that ideal. So whether it's been trying to pursue a YouTube channel and making videos for that, or going through Repro Labels, it's all been going towards that goal. So, I lost my train of thought.
It's okay. So you mentioned you have a YouTube channel. You do a lot of toy customizing and modifying of stuff. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? What is the channel, first off? And
sure.
Tell us what you do with it.
My YouTube channel is Camzilla51. And I used to do reviews when I first started, because that seemed to be what was hot and fun at the time. Everyone did it. And as time went by, the review scene kind of died down a little bit, and it's now centered around a handful of people, and it's really hard to break into. So I kind of transitioned into this space of what else do Transformers fans need? And it turned out to be modifications. A lot of Transformers fans are not completely satisfied all the time with toys that come out, and that's understandable because it's hard to please everybody. And sometimes there's a toy that could live up to its potential if it just had a slight change to it. So there's an ever living market of being able to modify your toys. So I started getting into communities like that and sharing ideas with other customizing types. And then I'd say about when the first movie and animated were really big and they had just come out, I started to get a little bit into customizing and painting, because I'd be watching animated and I'd see extra little blocks of color or blacks here and there, and I'd want the toys to look exactly like they did on the cartoon. So I found some hobby paints and I started to get into that, and my first customs are, I promise you, atrocious. But
I have a toy from the first movie line. It was like actually later on first movie line when they were like, oh, we this movie was really successful, so we just got to put stuff out. Mm-hmm. There is this Transformer, and it transforms officially into a hovercraft, like a little hovercraft. Mm-hmm. But there is a way you can modify the transformation, not even with any tools or anything, but you can transform it into a toilet.
That's beautiful.
I think its name is Storm Surge, and it was originally a mold from Transformers Cybertron.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what his name was back then, but it's quite the funny toy. But anyway, one of the first things that I personally tried to customize, and this was me as a 12-year-old kid with absolutely no skill at this. I've taken a few art class, but I was terrible at painting, especially 3D surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I took that... That Storm Surge figure, and it just happens to look like a G1 Transformer named Seaspray. So what I did is Seaspray has this giant yellow set of propellers on his back that come up from the back of the hoverboat mode, mm-hmm. up over the canopy in the windscreen area. It's hard to explain. If you know what Seaspray looks like, you will know. But I just took a bunch of yellow paints and globbed it on there, like hoping it would stick and look good, and it was a disaster. I destroyed the gimmick of the toy, and it's something that really takes some skill. And
it does, and it takes a really long time to get good at.
Did you start off anything like that, or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember painting a lot of metallic things on some of my first movie toys, and mm-hmm. like the first movie Ratchet. Who was that green ambulance, right?
Yeah.
His feet were black instead of green, which mm-hmm. was the predominant color in the design. So I remember going into a Hobby Lobby and getting like some green lacquer paint and not understanding anything about lacquer. And
I couldn't even tell you what lacquer means.
I mean, heck, it's hard to wrap your head around. But like one foot is painted that perfect color, but it's like got a thumbprint in it. And the other foot is painted with like a dull primer color that I never finished.
the thumbprint is what really gets me, because you're dumb. You don't know what you're doing when you're starting out customizing stuff, and you'll be holding it through the paint that you have just painted on, and it's completely wet.
Yeah.
And it's dumb of us.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that. It's something that really you start off with and you just don't know anything about.
Yeah.
But continue. How did that process of you getting good at it happen?
Well, I always had this ideal of trying to recreate the first movie with a full cast of toys, frame for frame, in stop motion.
And you got that nowadays with all the Studio Series stuff. But back then, that wasn't even possible.
Yeah, and I filled the spots where I could, and I wanted to make all of the toys as screen accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But that was way before I realized how much time stop motion took.
Yeah.
And I made a few stop motion videos throughout my days of high school, a little bit into college. But There was just no way of achieving that idea.
Yeah, if you want to see some of his early stop motion work, it is some pretty interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I will just say the least. If you check out his YouTube channel, I think it, if I'm correct, it is all there, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was exploring it the other night, and I saw that.
Yeah. There's one called Christmas for Mechs, like mechanical, you know, like Gundam mech. And it featured Iron Man and Bumblebee. And it was, I mean, I made it for a religion class. And, I mean, it was pretty preachy. Nowadays, I go, oh, no. But, I mean, for the time, it was, you know, it was even more cringy as I showed it to my class. I presented it while everyone else was like, here's my poster board. I come in and I'm like, hi, I've been working for the past 2 weeks on this. Enjoy.
Yeah, you don't want to underestimate how long a stop motion project is. When I was doing YouTube, I would dabble a little bit into it, and I really learned just how big of an undertaking it is.
Yeah.
I once took over my whole entire dining room table, tried to make it into a set, and I got daunted by the fact that I didn't realize how big of a project it was.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, also on your YouTube channel, you have this really, really in-depth review, a video series on restoring G1 transformers.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I'd been picking up techniques here and there about trying to restore G1 toys. And that came out of taking everything that I knew about customization and using it to revitalize vintage Transformers, because there are only so many samples out there that are still in fantastic condition. And I think that we as a community and as a fandom in part owe it to those toys to try and, you know, breathe the life back into ones that are so poorly gone that others might not consider them. So I started with G1 Starscream, and I found one of him on Facebook or eBay, and he had these really complex rib stickers that are hard to understand because they fold up like origami.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try and see if I could completely restore this toy. He had peeling, he had some missing, he had some where the adhesive was gone and they were curling up, and some where the paper was exposed. It was a right mess. But I put this three-parter together, and at the end I used a reproduction set of Repro labels on. And I remember sharing this to the Repro labels group, and I was like, hey, check it out. You know, if anybody wants to know how to do this kind of thing, you know, I was just trying to be helpful to the group.
I'll tell you something. You personally have helped me get over the stigma of restoring stuff. You made me see, like, oh, it's not a bad thing to touch these things and work on them. They're toys. They're meant to be.
Yeah.
They're meant to be messed with. Not specifically like that necessarily, but they can take the abuse and take being bathed and stuff like that and being disassembled. And I appreciate that, by the way. I've actually started a lot of customizing because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not customizing, restoring. I've every time I've acquired a new G1 figure, I basically will give it a bath, and that's all because of you.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how much of a change it'll make when you take a vintage toy and it's like you hold it and it creaks and it's got the dust on it, and there's this feeling that we get as collectors to treat it like glass, you know. And in some cases, like with gold plastic, absolutely, that's true. But
If you don't know he's talking about, there is an issue with plastic, specifically like 90s and earlier plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly rectified now, but the way that it was made, I think it was on a chemical level, it would just disintegrate over time, and you would end up having figures with crucial parts that have gold plastic on like a hinge or something like that, and those hinges and stuff would just shatter, and it would completely break the toy.
Yeah.
But continue what you're saying.
So it's amazing when you have a normal toy that doesn't have gold plastic. I mean, the people who can deal with that, like Ryan on the Sabertron.com, he has done galleries with
Yeah, I saw a story of him talking about one of the worst affected, which is like G2 Firefly, which was part of the G2 aerial slingshot. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that thing is completely made of gold plastic. And he went into that gallery just preparing to lose it. He prepared to lose that figure. He knew it wasn't coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So it can really make collectors sweat. But it's important to realize that, I mean, when you just dust off an old Transformer, it can really bring back the life of it. A good washing.
Any toy.
Yeah. And it really frees up the joints and it makes it feel brand new again.
Yeah, it really does.
I live for that feeling. Just breathing the life back into something that somebody else abandoned.
That's a very poetic way of putting it.
Thank you.
So a big part of your life, and we've already mentioned this a bit, is Repro Labels.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you make the sets, you're assigned a set, and then you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the design process like for you?
Okay. Well, we will often, we the designers,
yeah.
I mean, we'll often get our assignment, and sometimes we don't know what's coming down the pipeline until it's right on our to-do list. But we'll get an assignment. We'll say, okay, we're doing the stickers for this toy. And they say, here's the project sheet. And on the project sheet are photographs of the pictures with little, let's say, light blue outlines around the spots on the toy.
I think I've seen those posted to somewhere.
I don't know. Maybe.
I've seen those.
I might have shared a prototype of one conversion set that I had in mind to the Repro Labels page. But
yeah, continue.
Sure. So we take that, and we're also given an Illustrator file with all the cut lines on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I'll do is I will look up as much as I can about that character. I'll go to the TF Wiki. I will read their entire bio and everything that I can. I will look at every toy that has existed. Usually the Sabertron.com galleries are great for me because I can usually find almost any angle that I want of a toy. And I wish that I could make more sets where I have the toy in hand, because that's when I really feel like I'm doing my best work, because I can turn it around and I can see how spaces relate to one another.
Do you end up getting the assignment before even owning the toy personally a lot of the time?
Most of the time. Yeah.
Do you think that's a big challenge? Or?
Yes, I do. I'd say it takes maybe twice as long for me, because if I have the toy, I can see it on the toy. I can imagine it. I can feel it, you know. If I don't have the toy, then I'm living off of somebody's reviews or galleries or anything that I can find. Like for the set that we just did for Pyro, I used a gallery for that, but it's also really tricky because there aren't a whole lot of pictures of them online.
Mm-hmm. They are a very rare toy. Yeah, also original.
But sometimes what really helps is when somebody shares an image or maybe even a scan of the original sticker sheet flat.
Yeah, I can get that.
Oh, that's like crack. It's great because I can just see what it is flat without perspective and be able to use that as clean reference. So then I'll do the artwork for the set. I'll start with color blocking, then I'll make stripes or effects or shading. And then when I'm done with all of my artwork, I'll send it back to Repro Labels. And I'll give like a little bit of a tour around the set. Like, hey, I've made 5 license plates and here's what they all mean.
Yeah.
And I have included this and this and this. And then they will take that and they'll make the set. And they usually have some discrepancies that they'll make. Like, if they feel that a sticker or an idea doesn't serve as the toy, sometimes they'll cut it, or sometimes they will add something that they feel that the set should also include. So after it goes through that process, then they go to printing it and cutting it and getting it ready for the next release with photographs, and then we will release those photographs when Aaron Black, who's the boss, the big boss, decides that it's ready.
And that's when we see them on the Facebook page.
Yeah, and all of us designers get to share the photos of what we designed.
Yeah,
we get,
yeah, like, you guys post them yourselves. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So there's a big big divide in our fandom where you have the more than meets the eye and all those comic book people, and then you have G1 and cartoon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw the line and what gets put onto the toy? Is there like a vote on like popularity or...
Sometimes.
Or do you just have to wing it and hope that you get it correct?
Well, I'd say that most often I try to design more to the Generation 1 toy. But I am familiar with and I have been designing towards a lot of the comic book references for a long time. Before I was on the team, I would often try to pitch ideas like that to the existing team and say, hey, this is a really important character in these comics and I think we should try and cater something
mm-hmm.
to that. It has taken a little while, but eventually the design team has really understood how important IDW is, and we fit things in wherever we can. When it comes to Pyro, he has two separate camps of fame. He's got the original toy, and he's got Last Stand of the Wreckers, which is the comic book series that he was in. And since the proportions were leaning closer to that new comic book style,
mm-hmm.
I designed mostly to that while making some toyetic compromises and things that were little stickers on the original toy. So there's a little bit of a Mary in between there.
Now, we're almost out of time, but before we go, I want to ask you one more important question about how you ended up on the Rebel Labels design team.
Oh, that's a good story. So at my day job, which is Domini Luxury, it's a handbag company, right? I had been making these sketchboard videos, which involve Illustrator, and I had to get into Illustrator and learn how to do that. And I had to try and figure out how to make the shapes and the artwork. And eventually, I kind of got a little bit of a confidence in it. And then I heard a podcast where Alex Black was explaining a lot about being on the Repro Labels team. And he's the son of Aaron Black. So he's like second in command of the whole company.
They're the people who created the company?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So he gave a podcast and he was talking about all the things and all the processes similar to what I've been explaining. And I started to think, what if I could be on the team? So I talked to my girlfriend about it and I said, do you think I can do it? And she said, yeah, I think you've got the skills. So I took her advice. I finally got bold enough and I messaged Alex personally and I said, I think I've got the skills and I'd like to try and get on the team if I can. And he said, okay. And he gave me a trial set, which was Titans Return Bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked the artwork I did and they brought me onto the team.
That's fantastic. It really shows that you can take your hobby and really just do something with it.
Yeah. This has really been a dream come true to be on this team. Because, I mean, I've been following them for years, and I feel like I'm really contributing to the fandom. I'm contributing to this wonderful Transformers existence, and it's life-fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of videos on my channel where I go into more depth on that. So if anyone would like to go watch, Camzilla51, again, is my...
I was about to say, where can we find you on the internets?
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to promote? Repro Labels?
Yes,
of course. Can everybody find the work you do and stuff like that?
Well, reprolabels.com or toyhacks.com is where all of my sticker sets are. We just announced a new feature where you can search by someone's name up in the search bar, and you can see everything that they have designed. And they give like a lot of respect to the designers for that, and I really appreciate it. It's like... artists for comic books. So yeah, you can look up anything that I've done there. And a fun little Easter egg for anyone who's listening, you can find my logo in many of the sets that I've done. Not all, but keep your eyes peeled.
So that's it for today. Thank you so much, Cameron, for coming on the show. It's always an inspiration to see someone being able to take their hobby and evolve it into what you have done. once again, thank you for listening, everybody. This has been Josh Bass from KPCRadio.com signing off. Have a good day.